This is tape two of an interview between Karen Duter and Rebecca. Date is the 5th of August, 1997. Reba, you were just talking about how the relationships you had were straight women that you had ruled out.
Yep, that's what we did in those days. Get to know a woman and chatted her up and charmed her. And if you were lucky, you got her into your bed. And if you were more lucky, she hung around for a while. I got involved with a really neat person. She was a high school teacher. She taught art and English. And then after, and she was very, very homophobic. And after a while, she freaked out and said, she lived in Ontario and I lived in Quebec. She phoned me and said, when you're coming up to visit, I want you to bring everything I've ever sent you, everything I've ever written you, all my pictures. And it's like it was over. Bam. So I had to deal with that kind of stuff. But basically, all the women I knew had been straight.
And you met them through work, or?
Yeah. I met that one in camping. I used to make friends with her and work my way into her underwear. I don't know how I did that. I couldn't do it today. In those days, that's sort of, I didn't know any bites, and I wanted a lover. And that's what we did. I didn't know how else to find a lover. I wasn't going to find one in one of those bars. That was very clear to me. So, I met them, let's see, through friends, through activities, I don't know.
So tell me about the famous trip to find the lesbians.
One week and I made it to New York City. Well, you see, all these books talk about New York. They all talk about Greenwich Village. And we were sure that's where they all were. So you would laugh if you'd seen us. She was about 5'5". I'm only 5 feet tall. And she was very heavy. I was really skinny in those days. She wore a dress. I wore a red blazer, black pants, and a tie, shirt and tie. My best butch clothes that I could figure out what a butch wore. And she had a dress, and off we went to look for the dikes, and walked around Greenwich Village, got nowhere, got a cabby, said, want to go to a gay bar, took us to some bar. We went in there and looked around and couldn't tell A from B. We were very uptight. We had, I don't know what we had, something to eat or drink. And we looked around. People looked at us. I guess we looked really weird. We must have looked really weird. And that was it. That was our big foray into New York City. I mean, we never found them. I mean, to our knowledge, we never found them. I mean, we don't know what we were looking for. We were looking for a very obvious butch femme scene. All the butchers were looking like butchers, and all the femmes were looking like femmes, and you could tell them apart, and they'd be in couples, and we'd recognize the thing, but we didn't find that kind of a scene anywhere. So, a funnier story is on my honeymoon, George and I went to New York, we were in Greenwich Village, we wandered into a bar, and guess what? It took a while, actually. And we said, oh, we're on our honeymoon, like such dodos, you know. And there are all these butches in their black suits and white shirts, ties and short breast cuts. But they were guys at first, right? And there's this woman on stage. She had bare breasts and thin cuts. She was making her nipples dance in all directions. And it's like, wow, what is it? Where are we? And that's when I found the dykes, and I wasn't looking for them. There they were.
When you went with Reba, did you remember that and go back to the same place?
No, I totally didn't know where that was. So that was funny. So Reba and I, we spent a long time not finding lesbians until she moved to New York and found Daughters of Bilitis and the Ladder and all that kind of old stuff. And hooked up with some dykes, and before long she had a lover. I was very jealous, living in Montreal, but anyhow, eventually found my path.
In the meantime, you know, from reading those novels and everything, did you use the word lesbian to describe yourself, or how did you describe yourself?
I think gay. I don't think people use the word lesbian. Maybe. Okay. I don't remember. Didn't use the word dyke, that's for sure. Excuse me, gay or lesbian?
And what about, you said that you didn't seem to fit at the time, butcher or femme, so you didn't use either of those labels to describe yourself?
No. Mm-hmm. No. I knew I wasn't a femme, but I also knew I wasn't that kind of a butch. So today I say I'm a soft butch. That kind of means I'm not a femme, but I'm not a butch. Butch, no? Soft butch.
Did you have a sense of being a different kind of butch in those days?
Yeah. I knew I wasn't like the people in the bar. It was really evident and really clear. I had a really old Dutch. She had no teeth in her mouth. And she was French-Canadian. She spoke broken English. And she came up to me and she said, and I didn't know what she was talking about. She said, like what you do. And after the third time, I didn't get it. She finally said, are you a man or a woman? It really threw me. And I went, I don't know, either, both. She said, oh, I like that. And after that, I never went back to the bar because I was scared that she might want me. And I didn't know what to do with it. So that's it. So I had identified myself, I guess, in that moment. And she asked me what role that I play. I said, I don't know, both, either. I couldn't think. I knew I couldn't say one or the other. So it was weird. I knew that I didn't want a role. It was clear to me that I didn't really want to have a role. And Neva and I didn't have a role with each other. We were just sort of fairly equal. I was maybe a little bit more butch. She was maybe a little bit more femme. But it wasn't a really strongly, clearly defined separation between us. You know? I mean, in bed, there was no top and bottom kind of. And in our lives, and we were fairly equal. I mean, I never noticed that there was a really big difference. And even in the relationships with straight women that I kind of wrestled into bed, there wasn't really a butch-femme kind of thing. They weren't very femmy, particularly women. In fact, I probably chose them because they looked a little bit butchy, and so I thought maybe there was that potential, rather than if they were lipsticky and really, I would never have thought, and I think, to come on to somebody like that.
That's really interesting, because how did you, I mean, perhaps there were times when, you know, when you got it wrong, the signals weren't quite, but how did you know, did you think maybe this woman, when those women appeared to be straight? What clues?
I think that's it. I think there was this little butchy side to them. They weren't like the typical femme that you would think a woman's supposed to be like in those days. Lipstick and dresses, and they were kind of more androgynous. But, yeah, that's probably okay. Choose that. So I think that was a clue for me.
Were there very many times when the clues that you were getting were not really, you know, when did you flirt with some women and get either no reaction at all or a hostile reaction?
Sometimes I got nothing. I don't think I ever got anything hostile, except when this particular person freaked right out and, you know, did not have anything more to do with it. When I come and visit her, she wanted me to park my car like somewhere else and pretend, you know, she was very, very, very scared of all of it. So,
So tell me about flirting in those days. What did you do?
What did I do? I don't know. I don't know. I think I was just bold. I think I just got to know them a little bit. They got to liking me a little bit as a person. And I don't remember that I do.
Sort of, would you talk more, or was it a more physical thing?
I think there was a little bit of talking, but I think you kind of had to dive in there a bit. Touching, non-sexual at first, graduate, to go along. I don't know, nobody ever hit me or...
And then sort of kissed them?
Yeah, I remember this person that was my lover at the time when I got pregnant. She was straight. I was staying over at her house and we were sleeping together. And I think I just reached out, touched someone, and didn't get hit.
Mm-hmm. And how about, have you enjoyed sexual activity with George?
I like men. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was never the sex that was the problem for me. It was the emotional connection. It was the... something else. I don't know exactly what it is. But I connect with women in a different way than I connect with men. And it's not about sex. It's really got nothing to do with sex. Although I prefer being sexual with women. But it wasn't about sex that made me... drove me to a woman. It wasn't because I wasn't enjoying my sex life with George. That was okay. It's an okay part of our marriage. There's other parts that I felt disconnected in ways that I connect with women. There's just some magical thing that happens that's really deep, and it's not there with men. And after a while, you know, I realized that I'm not waiting to meet the right man, the perfect man. I've met lots of really nice men. Really good lovers, nice people, good guys. That wasn't it. There was something missing, and I don't know what that something exactly is, but I know I find it with women. So I'm happy. So I ain't broke, don't fix it.
Did you, given that your physical relationships had been okay with men, did you have a sense of when you started going out with women, did you have a sense of what you enjoyed physically? Like how, what sense did you have of your own body about what was pleasurable for you?
I think for me, pleasurable became the reciprocal side of it. I think with men, it's more they do it to you. With women, we do it for each other. And I like that side. I think, I don't know, with men, it always felt to me like there was a little bit of a power thing, like they were the man and I was the woman and I had my role and he had his role and we knew what those roles were. And with women, I don't find the roles getting in my way. I was more reciprocal and more sharing. And you could be more open in ways that I could be more open in ways that I couldn't be with men, even physically more open.
Did you find that was the case from your first relationship with a woman, or was it a process of learning?
I knew it right away. Right away, the first time that Reva and I ventured into the physical side of our relationship, I had already felt this really strong connection in other ways. So the physical thing was just like the completion of the circle. I didn't feel all those other things with George. Like I enjoyed the sex, but it was just sex. It could have been me and my vibrator, I don't know. I mean, what is sex? It's nothing in of itself. But it was a connecting. It was a way that we touched, the way that we could talk, the way that we could caress afterwards. And it didn't mean we were going to go another round necessarily. It was just a pleasure all by itself. So I think that's what that's about. I never have to think about defining this, so this is good.
Was George a virgin before you two?
No.
Okay. No. So, do you think, you were talking about how with men, there's this idea that, you know, the man has the role and the woman has the role. Where do you think you got those ideas from?
Books, my parents, radio.
So in terms of physical relationships and sex itself, had anybody actually, what kind of access to information had you had about sex, heterosexual sex?
I think my mother told me that it was, you had to please your husband. I think we all got that message, that it was men that had to be pleased. Who cared if you were pleased, as long as they were pleased? You know, it was a popular cultural educational thing that we all learned and heard about. And even if you read books or went to movies or whatever, it was always girls and what they could do for their guys. You know, you couldn't be too beautiful or too bosomy in those days, too buxom or too blonde, I don't know. But it was always for him. It was never for her. We didn't count all that much.
So there wasn't any attempt on the part of guys to give you pleasure?
I wouldn't say that. George was very into giving me pleasure. But I think just generally in the broader culture, that's the understanding was that we were there to serve our guys. You know, they needed it, we didn't need it, but when they needed it, we bloody better be there, you know, or else. I mean, George was kind of boring. I always knew Saturday afternoon we were going to have sex, because that's what we did Saturday afternoon. Came home for his break and, you know, I don't know.
So just once a week, or?
No, but that was definitely one day in the week that we were going to. Mm. But he was fairly enlightened. I mean, we had showers together, and he knew a lot about my anatomy, and he was a good lover. Mm. You know, it wasn't only about me pleasing him, but I knew that was my role, nonetheless. Mm. I knew that I had to please him, or he'd go find another woman. As it was, I found another woman. So, you never know, huh?
And so it felt right from that first moment.
Yep.
With Reba.
Yeah.
How difficult? Because did you say? Am I correct in thinking that you said that you were living with her and her dad?
No, that was Ruthie.
Oh,
that was when Pony was born.
Right.
No, I lived with George. She lived with her parents. Mm. She was young. I think she was 18 and I was 22. Mm. And she was 19 and I was the older woman. It's funny. In fact, in those days, it was not legal to be a lesbian until you were 21. So we used to have a fear that if anybody found us out, she might go to jail, or I might go to jail, or we both might go to jail. And it was something that was there in the air with us, interestingly enough. She found out this little important piece of trivia.
Where did you meet, given that you're living with George and she's at home? How did you
arrange? Class, in a classroom. Somehow there were a bunch of us that ended up hanging out together.
And did you started dating her before you got divorced?
Well, we were friends. Mm. I didn't do anything with her until I got divorced. Mm. I was very honorable. Wouldn't have felt right.
Right.
So.
And so at that point you'd moved out?
He moved out.
He moved out. Okay. So then you had your own place.
Yeah.
And did she come over?
Yep, she sure did. Yep, and it was steamy nights after steamy nights. Yeah. And I, honest to God, that first time we made love, I had never known what real passion was, ever. And in spite of all the good times with the men and all the orgasms and everything else, I had never experienced that passion that I had with Reba. It was like, wow. Where did this come from?
And did the two of you know what to do? Did you go by instinct?
Didn't have a clue. We just kind of tentatively tried this and that. Started off with kissing, and we kind of learned our way. I think after a while, we knew what we were doing. But it was really slow. It was exploratory. I think those books didn't give a lot of explicit information either, so you couldn't really kind of go, oh, well, they did that in the book, you know. They didn't tell you a lot beyond kissing what they did. So we kind of made it up.
Mm. Had she had any sexual experience before that?
Nothing. Nothing, not even with men. So we were really babes in the woods.
Was it scary for you, or just, or something?
A little bit. I thought, I know what to do with George. I haven't got a clue what to do with her. And I don't know, somehow, you know, making love is a natural thing. We really figured it out quickly enough. We found our way to it easily enough.
Okay. Did you have a sense, because you've talked about having orgasms before with the guys, did you have a sense of things that they had done that had given you pleasure, and did you try any sort of similar positions or anything like that?
Oh, probably. I knew that penetration wasn't going to be part of this picture because we didn't have the equipment, but we had fingers, I guess. I don't know. I think that's where it all led initially. But I think soon enough we figured out what we liked, what we didn't like, what felt good, what didn't feel good. And I remember the first time Eva said to me, I want to go down on you. I thought, what's that? And I was like, wow, this is different.
Now, where did she... That's
oral sex. I don't know where she got it from.
Mm.
I don't know if she got it out of her head or where or what.
And that was the phrase that she used?
I think
going
so.
Because, yeah, I wondered, where did she get that information from?
I think that's what she said, or she... I don't remember exactly, but that's what she wanted to do, and it was a new move, and I was like, oh, okay.
How long was it before you went to
that? Oh, quite a long time. Oh, yeah, a long time.
Like weeks or?
Oh, months.
Months?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'll try it. Try anything once, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've read Boots of Leather, Slippers of Gold. The Kennedy and Davis book about buffalo, and they talk in there, the women they interviewed in there talked about the degree to which lesbians in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s did or did not engage in oral sex, but also did or did not use dildos. Did you know anything much about that side of the lesbian scene?
Not in the least. Didn't know a thing about dildos. Never heard of them. Was not familiar with that. I think that the old-timey butches were into that. I think they used to wear them all the time sometimes under their jeans so they'd look, I don't know, well hung or whatever. No, since I was a soft butch, and I never heard about dildos, never, yeah. And oral sex, so that was just sort of, I don't know where it came out of the blue. It wasn't anything I read or heard about or knew about. And in fact, I thought to myself, what the hell is she doing? What's happening? What is it? Well, I liked it, of course, but I was kind of surprised, you know, like it was... And anything I had done, or even with men, up to at that point, or had heard of, or I thought, okay. So I don't know where she got this. She may have read this in a book, but she read many of these books. Some book might have talked about it. So.
Yeah, Kennedy and Davis reveal how, you know, a lot of the women said that they never did oral sex. for quite a while that it was in some groups thought to be part of the sort of the decadent set. But then there was an similar feelings towards women who used dildos.
Well, we didn't do that a lot, oral sex. I was just like, it wasn't a matter of every day, part of our really part of our sexual, pardon me, making out, but we did it a time or two.
And that wasn't something that that any of the guys had expected you to do?
Not yet. Not up to that point. Well, the only guy in my life had been George up to that point, so we didn't do that. That's good.
The novels that you've read, how explicit had they been?
They weren't very explicit. I mean, if you read The Well of Loneliness, it was very, you know, in the mind, heroic and all that. Well, a lot of the novels were similar in that they talked about, you know, passion and all, but they didn't talk about how, you know, they did this. They didn't say, I put my hand into her wet cunt or they didn't use that kind of language. It was more genteel, you know. And they left a lot to your imagination. And it was a story that was more, it was more the story than the explicit sex. And it was about, you know, lesbian passion and how, in the end, some man saves one of them. And the other one is crushed or commits suicide or, you know, always had a bad ending. Mm-hmm. Or almost always.
Had you read The Well of Loneliness at that point?
Oh, yeah, I read The Well of Loneliness. And now when I read The Well of Loneliness, I tried to get Reva to date. I was trying to save her. I thought, huh, my chance to be a hero. Well, it didn't work. And it impacted me tremendously, that book.
Where did you get it?
I think Reva lent it to me. I don't know where she got all these books. The corner store, the drug store, the grocery store. I mean, they were everywhere. They weren't hard to find. I hadn't bought any. She was my supplier. And she had many. Every week a new book arrived.
And she kept them, or did she just circulate them amongst people she knew and then get them back?
I don't know who else read them besides me. I know I read them and I gave them back to her. She'd always have another one. Okay. So, I'll read it.
What about the medical books about homosexuality? Any of the stuff that was around at the 50s? Did you get to read that?
I tried to read all, find everything I could about it. Of course, there was Freud with his arrested teenage stuff. And none of it had anything encouraging. Were good to tell me. After a while, I just gave up.
Do you think it impacted on you emotionally, how you felt about yourself, or?
Probably. I think I was battling, trying to think I'm not sick, or arrested, whatever.
But nobody tried to, like nobody from your family or community tried to push you into therapy or anything like that?
No. Nobody tried to deprogram me. Luckily, I probably would have refused to go anyhow.
What about Reva's family? Did they know?
Nope.
Right, for how long?
They didn't know till really a long time. Mm. Long after we broke up, they still didn't know. I think they didn't know until she got involved with Esther in New York. They were together for a really long time. I think that's when her mother and father sort of knew. I don't know if she ever really said. I think I outed her, actually.
To her parents?
Yeah.
Was that because her parents were more strict than yours, or?
No, she just, I don't know. Our own homophobia, I guess. But I was never one to be intimidated by things. So I was out. I had a lover. I was with Margaret, I think, at the time. And we were with Reva and her parents, and I introduced her as my lover, I think is what I did. Yeah. Probably that's what I did.
Did that cause conflict between the two of you? Or did you feel that you were more open than she was, and did that ever cause conflict?
No. She lived her life, I lived mine. I took a lot of flack. She didn't take any flack. But all her friends knew, though. Her friends all knew. Mm. They were mostly her friends. They all knew. My best friend stopped being my friend when she found out. Mm. I think she's... When we were young, I don't know, how old were we? Oh, early teens, maybe 13. Maybe 14. She was in my bed. We used to sleep together. We were just friends, you know, in the country. And she was crying. And I said, what's the matter? And she said, she had these feelings. I think they were for me. And I said, it's okay, don't cry. It's just, and I had read Freud. I said, it's just a teenage phase you're going through. It'll pass. All I understood was that she was going through a phase, and I wasn't going through this phase. I comforted her, and that was the last time we ever talked about it. And I think when I came out as a lesbian, she was married at the time, as we were both married. She was very threatened, I'm sure, by her own stuff that I think she squelched down somewhere and did really well. And I don't think she could cope with me coming out all of a sudden. And in those days, you know, nobody talked about this stuff. I often think about her, and I wonder if she's seen a gay pride march and seen it on TV and read a book or two. And maybe either herself, she's come out by now, or she's at least allowed me my lesbianism without hating me and not hating me, but fearing me or needing the distance the way she did.
Did the topic of lesbianism come up early on between any other of your friends and you?
Never talked about it, never heard of it, never knew anything about it.
So when she said that she had homosexual feelings, was that the first time you'd ever heard of? Well, no, you'd read Freud.
Well, I just read Freud because I was interested in psychology. It wasn't because I was looking for gay and lesbian literature. I just had read Freud. And I said, oh, I just read this book, and it's what it says, so don't worry. You know, but it wasn't any place I'd ever thought about or come to. Or, it was totally out of my consciousness and my world. And I was rather taken aback. I agree. But I knew without a doubt she was going through this teenage thing. I mean, Freud said so, didn't he? He was like God in those days.
When you did identify as gay or as lesbian, how did it feel applying that word to yourself? Like, given that you did for
it? It was a hard label to wear. I think initially, I think I had trouble saying to myself, I am a lesbian. I think I just loved Ava more than having a label. And lots of real lesbians in the first time. I'm not a lesbian, I just love so-and-so. I don't wear the label, and I don't think I wanted to wear a label at the time.
So what was different the second time you came out?
Oh, everything. Everything was different. I went to this. So Reva, again, had been going through her sister's stuff and said there was a drop-in lesbian thing happening on Thursday night at such and such a place, and if I wanted to go, I could do that. So I very bravely went to this thing. It was a room full of women, first of all. I was already first shocked. And they were planning the lesbian conference or whatever. lesbian thing. Hundreds of lesbians are going to be arriving from all over the place. So the next thing I knew, and there was a woman there, turned out to be my lover in the end. She was sitting, and this other woman just kept kind of crawling into her lap. And there was also a thing of beer, and I said, finally, well, what's with this beer? Is it for sale? Is it for free? Oh, they were all apologizing. So I bought a beer. Not going to drink the stuff, but I wanted to be part of this evening. And Margaret said she lived in Chateauguay, and she needed to wait for a bus at midnight. I said, bus? I said, why don't we go for chocolate or something? So we did, and then she purposefully missed the bus and ended up at my place. I put myself into things. I was really an innocent in this sense. I really was. Anyway, I got into bed with my socks and my pajamas, and she jumps into my bed naked. I'm like, oh my God. Okay, after a little while, I said, I'm really warm. I've got to take off these woolly socks and flannel pajamas. And then I talked my head off because I was so terrified. Finally, around 3 a.m., she kissed me and said, that's the only way to shut me up. I don't know. Anyhow, I can't even remember her name the next day. That's how bad that was. But we did end up being lovers. But it was different because I had met these bikes. They were everywhere. And I went to other meetings and I helped plan this conference and I was just blown away. There was a dance at the New Haven Women's Liberation Rock Band. And there were like, I don't know, maybe 500 women walking and rolling. There were so many bodies you could hardly move. And I was like a kid in Thailand. Could not believe my eyes. Never looked back. I could go dancing. I could go partying. I could have people over for dinner. I could be a normal person. Finally, that's what I wanted. So that was it. Ever since. I haven't had with a man since.
So that changed your whole social life as well?
Changed everything. Changed my social life, changed my political life. I knew I was a feminist just by inclination, but now I had a political format for this, and no, feminism was on the upswing at that time. It was that thing, and there was androgyny. Everybody wore black shirt and blue jeans, so didn't have to worry about butch and femme. They all looked like penguins. Penguin Island, there was a riot.
What year was that conference?
That was, let's see, my daughter was 6 and she's 30, so 14 years ago.
Has that changed the way that you think about sexuality as well, like physical sexuality?
It's changed everything. It makes me know that I'm not a freak. It makes me know that I'm just part of another subgroup. Makes me think that the parameters of sex are very wide and diverse and exciting and wonderful. And I'm really, you know, happy to be part of that and not feel like an outsider, which I did for so many. From 21 to 38, I was always an outsider wanting to be part of a something, but I thought my sexuality was weird, I thought I was weird, I didn't know where to fit, but now I knew. And I knew where I fit. And I thought, look at all these gorgeous women, they can all be bad if I did it. And sometimes I still look at women and I think, it's really nice, it's really, you know, I'm in a relationship, I don't want to sleep with a whole pile of women, but I really appreciate. And I look at a woman and she has a nice body or a nice smile or nice eyes. I think it's so wonderful.
So in an earlier part of the interview, you were talking about how when your friend started giving you the novels, when you weren't out yet, when she started giving you the novels, and first of all, you resisted. And you sort of, you know, you said actually that you didn't want to be like that.
Right.
I wanted to ask you more about that, because I wanted to ask you about why you didn't want to be like that, and what kind of messages that you had been given that sort of made you a little wary of that.
Well, interestingly, I had no messages. It's just that I didn't know anybody like that, and I knew on some level that like that wasn't like everybody else. And I knew that we would meet with difficulty, scorn, rejection, isolation. And I sort of knew all those things. I think I just knew them by instinct, and also from the stories. The stories made it really clear that being gay was not a good thing and not acceptable and not part of society. So I knew that we couldn't do that, because you'd have to experience all this awful stuff. So it wasn't so much that somebody else gave me a message. Really, these books were the message, I think.
What about the covers of the book? When you told the fabulous story about going to find the lesbians, and you talked about how you dressed up and you wore your best butch outfit and this sort of thing, and you mentioned that that was sort of the way you got it from the books. All the pictures I've seen of the covers of the books, most of them don't have very butch women on the cover. You know, they're sort of very voluptuous women with a stereotypical hourglass figure, and there's the dark-haired one who seems a bit older and the blonde one. So was it the content of the books between the covers that said, you know, here are the butches and here are the femmes?
I think the Well of Loneliness really was my very first major influence on how gay and lesbian life really is. And there was definitely Stephen, this wonderful butchy person who definitely was into saving her femmy girlfriend by even letting her go into the arms of a man, because she thought this was, you know, it was so tragic to read this book. And I thought, actually, I fancied myself to be like this Stephen, and I really worked hard at getting my very first lover to go out with men and to be, because, you know, I thought I was doing the right thing. So that's how much that book influenced me initially. And I think all the other books, they weren't so heavily butch femme, but they were definitely, there was always a little vulnerable femmy one and a strong, more butchy one. Yeah.
Can you remember how old you were when you read The Well of Loneliness?
21.
21.
Mm. Absolutely. I was young, married, 21-year-old. And started reading these books.
And did you ever talk to any other women about the content of the book?
No. Never talked to a soul.
I've read in some books that some lesbians really hated the book because they thought that it portrayed lesbianism in a really poor light.
I didn't know that. I just thought it was the Bible. I thought, wow, what an empowering, powerful, amazing book. This is how it is. What did I know as an innocent? You know, that was my very first book was The Well of Loneliness. And I was like, wow. So I was totally taken in by the myth that, you know, it was bad to be a dyke, and it was my duty to steer my potential lover in the right path. I didn't know I should talk to people about this book. I didn't have anybody to talk to, literally. At that point.
Mm.
Yeah. So I just took it as a truth.
Mm. What about Chatelaine? And did you ever read any of the sort of lesbian material?
No
magazines or anything like that?
No, never even knew it was out there. Not a clue.
So after you went to Greenwich Village and you couldn't find the lesbians, how did you learn to spot dykes after that? Like, what were the clues that you were looking for when you realized that maybe they weren't that easy to spot after all?
I don't think we ever really spotted them during the first 8 years that Riva and I were lovers, off and on eventually. We did meet one young woman who came on to Riva, decided I was the butch in this relationship. I'm not sure why. And then she decided to come on to me. And this is the only second lesbian in our lives at that point, and I was totally had no framework, no context for it. She was very sheltered, living at home with mommy and daddy, a university student, and so this kind of broadened our little teeny tiny horizon by a speck, but it didn't really get us anywhere. And it wasn't until Reva moved to New York and found the Daughters of Bilitis, the ladder, and some kind of lesbian contact that things started to shift a little bit. Mm-hmm. Up until that point, we didn't recognize other lesbians. We never found other lesbians. I seduced many lovely straight women over the years until feminism hit me. I mean, I didn't know dykes, literally. Didn't ever meet a dyke.
Well, this young woman must have spotted you.
She spotted us, for sure.
I wonder what it was that she noticed.
Well, we were really open about being a couple of dykes. I mean, everybody that knew us knew we were dykes. Mm. We never hid it from our straight friends. We had a whole slew of straight girlfriends, and they all knew that Reva and I were lovers. And we rented a country house, and we had the bedroom together, the only double bed. They all knew what was going on, and they were okay somehow with it. And I'm not sure, this woman was a cousin of one of the women that knew we were dykes, so she may have told her, or she may have just noticed us if she was in that frame of mind and looking, you know. But we thought we were it. Montreal's only dykes. Yeah, pretty absurd.
You talk about renting a country house. Mm-hmm. I've heard for Ontario of sort of summer visiting spots that were popular with lesbians, but I haven't heard anything about sort of the country around Montreal. Did you ever hear of anything like that, a sort of favorite summer spot where lesbians and or gay men would go?
Nope, no. Not a clue. Never did tap into that side of the life, unfortunately. No, this was just a regular summer cottage that a whole pile of women, young women, got together, pooled our money, and just rented it for the summer. It was right on a lake. It was great. And we were the token dykes.
Were you physically affectionate around the straight women?
Yeah. And that
didn't bother them at all?
They sort of were okay with it, except I think there was one more Christian-leaning in the group that didn't quite like our energy. But I think everybody else was cool. We weren't, you know, outrageous in front of people. But we were obviously affectionate and a couple. I mean, you could tell we couldn't keep away from each other too much. We were young.
So like kissing, hugging, or...
Oh, holding hands, hugging, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just mild stuff.
So, did you also do that on the street, or
no?
No,
no, we didn't do that on the street.
Because you, why?
Well, we didn't think it would be a kosher thing to do. I don't know. But nobody else did it on the street, so we weren't gonna.
So it wasn't just that you feared the results as lesbians. It was something that nobody seemed to do.
I think it was an unwritten taboo. I think we knew it was just not done. There were a lot of things that we never talked about. Like this was a whole, I don't know, there was so much under the surface that never got dealt with. In retrospect, I mean, today I would be talking about all of it. But back then we never talked about why we didn't seem to find other lesbians and we were the only two. Why we didn't hold hands on the sidewalks or... why we didn't make a big effort in our own city to find out where the dykes hang out or if they hang, you know. We sort of assumed in some naive way that it was us. And if there was another dyke out there, we'd never find her. Mm-hmm. It never occurred to us that there might be a larger lesbian society. We were just naive.
And I take it from that you didn't read any of the, well, what's been called the yellow press, the scandal sheets in Montreal in the 50s and 60s.
No.
The sort of the equivalent of today's tabloid newspapers.
Nope. Yeah. Well, all we did was read these novels.
Right.
And the novels inspired first Reva and the other Reva, and then this Reva, two Rivas, inspired me to think that that was an appealing way to be. But other than the books, there was nothing. No discussion groups, no other role models, no nothing, no papers, no magazines, no bars even at that point. We hadn't yet discovered the gay bar. Only discovered that after Reva went off to New York. And she came back and looked through some papers and found out her sister was heading down this road too. And her sister had some information about a gay drop-in and a gay bar and blah, blah. Next thing I knew, I was finding things.
Is that in the early 60s?
We're still in the 60s here.
Yeah. Did you, after you accepted that you were a lesbian, in that time period, did you ever have any feelings of ambivalence about it?
Oh, lots.
Yeah?
Lots of feelings of ambivalence. In fact, I don't consider myself to have stopped being what I call bisexual in my expression of life until I met the feminist movements when I was 38. Up until that time, I still went out with men, I still slept with men, I still considered them part of my social milieu. I wasn't exclusively a dyke, and partly because I didn't know enough dykes with whom to be exclusively a dyke, and I was too sociable to be a nothing.
I remember you talking about going out dancing a lot and sort of and how was the other Reva didn't like to go out?
The other Reva was very shy, very inhibited. She was not socially adept. And besides which, there wasn't anywhere for us to go dancing. I mean, even if we wanted to dance, where would we have danced? Nowhere.
Were there rules at that point about, and how they talked in Forbidden Love about the rules about you couldn't go to certain parts of certain hotels without a male chaperone and this sort of, were there the same rules in Montreal?
I think it was true for bars, definitely. You could not go to a what they're called taverns, and women couldn't go in the taverns, I remember that. But being a person who doesn't really drink, I wasn't too in tune with that part of life either. I don't know a lot about the bar scene, and even when I did finally, I told you, find the bar scene, I couldn't figure out how to fit in it, partly because I was too naive to know I could order a Coke and spend yet another hour there. So if I'd been a little bit of a drinker, it probably would have helped. But I think, I don't know about the hotels, I'm not sure. I do know about the taverns. Now I know there were at least one heavy-duty gay, butch femme gay bar, the Pont de Paris, that I finally discovered. I don't know if there were other bars or not at that time. I don't think there were. I think that was the only gay bar, women's bar at the time, although men did frequent it.
How often did you end up going once you discovered it?
Oh, I think I went once a week. I would have gone every day. I would have lived there if I could have figured out how.
What, could you describe the sort of the scene in the bar at all? Or
Scene was very butch femme. It was very clear that everybody but me knew who they were, what their role was, who could dance with whom, who could sit with whom. So it was clear to me, I just couldn't figure out how to break in, how to identify myself with the group. I never danced with anybody in there. I finally got a little bit to know some of the butchier women, just peripherally. Mostly I'd sit alone. Sometimes they'd throw spitballs at me to get my attention. And once in a very blue moon, we had some conversation or interaction, but mostly it was just me. I'd sit by myself and watch and not know the code, not know the game, or I couldn't figure out how to access the scene.
And nobody kind of took you under their wing and tried to...
Well, it didn't work like that. The butches had to approach the femmes. That was it. Either you were a butch and you knew how to go up to a femme and say, hi, do you like to dance? And, you know, meet her that way, or you didn't. And since I didn't look like any kind of a femme, nobody was going to come and ask me to dance. Even though I wasn't a heavy-duty butch, like, you know, I still wasn't a femme. It was obviously that I was not a femme. I didn't wear makeup. I didn't wear girls' clothes. I didn't wear high heels. I didn't look like the femmes. So they had to automatically think I wasn't one, and therefore were all waiting for me to do something. Only I didn't know what or how, and I was always afraid that I'd ask somebody's girlfriend to dance and get my lights punched out. That was another thing. I was just not sure of myself. It was a foreign scene to me.
It's interesting because in Stone Butch Blues, the character there, there's almost like an apprenticeship system, you know, where an older butch sort of with the help of a femme kind of instructs the baby butch in the way one does things, but that didn't seem to be happening. And
well, probably one of the reasons is I wasn't really a baby butch in that I was already in my 30s when I finally discovered the bar, so I guess people figured I should know what side of the fence I'm on by then. You know, and I think it was slowly happening that this table of kind of butchy women were slowly adopting me as part of the pack, very slowly. And there was a small language barrier problem in that they were all francophone. I'm an anglophone. I do speak some French. They spoke, I think, 10 words of English. And so that, in my case, helped to further isolate me from the group, and they were all francophone. If there was anybody English speaking, I never fell over them. They were largely a francophone group, but they were slowly adopting me and figuring out that I was shy and naive and didn't know where to put myself, but very slowly. And then I didn't hang out there enough and I didn't drink enough to really break the barriers, I think.
Were there a lot of fights that you witnessed?
No. There would be some awful guy sometimes who'd come in, and this real butch waitress or whatever wait person was protective of me. And if these creeps came around, she'd come over to my table and say, if these guys bother you, you just let me know. So there was a sense of me being vulnerable and not able to care for myself as a full-fledged grown-up butch. I didn't see any fights. I do remember the big butch in the bathroom who charged you for your toilet paper and one at a time in and one at a time out. It was very serious stuff, that bathroom. But I didn't really see fights, no. I saw fights later on at the gay bar, but this was already, let's see, my daughter was 6, so she was born in 66, so we're getting up closer to the 70s, early 70s, and there were fights in the bars in those days over somebody's girl.
The one that you were going to in the early 60s, was it, what kind of standard was it? Was it dirty like people describe the Vanport being?
No, it was very high-techy, cute bar, and they'd always have a show, Le Grand Spectacle. Every Saturday night, they'd have these kind of French torch singers, and if you remember in Forbidden Love,
Nairobi,
she performed there.
Oh, you saw her
perform? No, but she talked about that's the kind of stuff they'd have. They'd have dancers, singers, loud. They still have it, actually, in the Pont de Paris. They still have a spectacle on Saturday night, two shows. So it was easy, in a way, to go there and just watch the show. And didn't have to interact. And, you know, it was like a time out for me.
And people, would people dress up for that kind of thing?
Everybody always dressed at that bar. The femmes were very classy. The butches were pretty snappy looking. Yeah. It wasn't a sleazy bar. As the Vanport was a really sleazy bar.
Was it, you know, how many of them seemed to be located in the kind of poorer downtown core area? Was that one?
Oh, yeah, Lower East Side.
But it was still a more reputable sort of joint.
But the bar, the inside of the bar was nice. It was clean. It was well kept. And they had, you know, really tough people around. You had to grease their palm to get a seat. And they didn't brook any nonsense, really, in their, you know. I think it's more than likely a mafia-run bar.
Mm.
The other bars were mafia-run. We knew that. So, yes, it was kept up.
So why do you think the butch woman was you know, charging you for your toilet paper and monitoring how many people went in and out?
Oh,
and that sort
I
of
think
thing?
It was immoral to have two women in the bathroom at the same time. God knows what we could do in there.
So it was kind of in case there was a raid or something like that?
Yeah, it was self-policing. Mm. Yeah, mm. Great big, like, at the door. You didn't cross her. And if you wanted more toilet paper or whatever, you had to give her a little tip.
Mm.
Yeah.
Was there ever a raid while you were there? Were you ever...
Nope. I was never there. I doubt if that bar ever got raided.
Mm.
The little bars downtown had cops coming in. I remember being there for some of that. Cops would come in and check out the place. Everybody would be sitting nice and quiet. No dancing. No touching. And they'd leave and we'd get back to whatever we were doing.
Mm.
Yeah. But I've never been in a roundup raid, like where they threw everybody out and hauled them off to Pokey. And that never happened.
Right. Did you know anybody in the
no.
that scene who was?
No. No.
Hmm. When you got to know more lesbians eventually, did they talk much as a group about sexual matters or anything like that? Was there sort of communication about, feel like, what it meant to be a lesbian? Or was it just kind of assumed that everybody knew how to do things? And
I kind of came out in the heyday of political madness. Everybody was a rah, rah, rah feminist. Everybody was political. Androgyny was in. Nobody really talked a lot about the little nitty-gritty things. They were too busy with the...